Thanks, brother. Good morning, everyone. It's cool where I am. I don't know how cool it is where some of you are, but we're glad to be here. In just a moment, part of what I'm going to share is the story. Some of you may know parts of it. I don't know if all of you know how we actually got to this place in this amphitheater, and it's pretty cool how God provides. So if you could put up the first slide. Yesterday, we established that there are particular things that can come into our life that are challenging and that create struggles. And I want to say the same thing I did yesterday. I'm not trying to say that everything that happens in life is going to fit in one of these boxes. Sometimes it's very easy for Christians to try and put things in a particular box. And there are just things that happen that I can't explain. They're a mystery. They're frustrating. There's loss of life. There's afflictions. There's things. But that doesn't dismiss the fact that there are things that happen because of choices. And there are things that happen that God is working in our life to accomplish a different purpose. And so while I don't believe everything that happens can fit into one of these categories, I believe a lot of the things that can happen fit into one of these categories. So the first thing we established yesterday is sometimes we can have struggles and challenges because it's the consequence of an unwise or disobedient choice that we made. And if that's true, we have another choice to make, and that is to repent. And to repent means to confess that what we've done is against what God would have us do, to turn around and go the other direction and change our thinking about it. So if you're at that place where you think you're struggling, this is where you need to use discernment and say, is it the consequence of a choice that I've made? Another thing that can bring struggle into our life is the consequence of the same choices others have made. Sometimes we've done nothing wrong, but others have made disobedient choices that have brought consequence to our life. And the danger there is that we can become bitter and angry, both at God and the people, and it puts us in our own prison. And so the only way out of that is to forgive. It doesn't mean we necessarily need to move back into a relationship that's hurtful or any of that, but it means to no longer say, I'm going to collect the debt. Because God forgave us. That's why it says in the Our Father, Lord, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who've trespassed against us. A third area, and this is where we need discernment, because I don't think there's a demon hiding around every bush, but I do believe spiritual warfare is real. And so we need to be discerning about, is this the enemy coming against us? And if he is, you as a person who knows Jesus and Jesus calls you his own, have authority over all of spiritual darkness. And you can pray with that authority. And so again, in all these areas, you want to ask the Lord to be helpful in you being discerning about, Lord, what is this struggle for? What is this consequence for? But the fourth category, which is where we parked yesterday and we're going to continue, is this idea that sometimes God intentionally allows and uses struggles and challenges and things that are overwhelming to actually accomplish a bigger purpose in maturing us. And so that's where we're going to move forward to today. You can go to the next slide. And that's why I've titled these things Lessons in the Desert. You can go to the next slide, please. So just as a matter of review, the purpose of the desert we established yesterday was not just to deliver us from something, but to deliver us to something. And that's true in the New Testament as well, too. But it's also to show us something about ourselves and who God is, which maybe we can't see anywhere else or in any other place. And we touched on Exodus 20:20, where it said, fear not, but then it also said, so that you may fear me. And those two different words of fear. One fear causes us to hide, and it's destructive. One fear causes us to be humbled, and it's productive. And what God is moving us to is to the fear of God, which is even more than loving Jesus, so that we would live before him humbly and live before him in a productive way. And then it also established that he's going to sometimes take us through things where he's going to test us. And the word I focused on yesterday was the word assay, which, referencing back to the Old West, there were assayer's office. They would go out, they would pan for gold, they'd bring it in, and they would test it to see if it was real or if it was fake. And God does that in us. Are we really those who trust and believe him or not? Because he exposes our hearts and thinking. And then I started to establish this idea that one of the reasons why he's doing that is he needs to reverse the curse that Eve brought upon us, where she denied God's truth, she was distracted from God's provision, and most importantly, she denied that God had her best interest in mind. And in the years that I've lived and in my own heart and the hearts I've seen of people, that is a root that God is continually trying to get out, because it will cause us to make decisions that lead to sinful choices when we ultimately don't believe that. But his ultimate goal is to show that he is present and promise-keeping for our deliverance, our provision, our future, and he has our best interest in mind. But the nation Israel did not learn that. We saw yesterday that they sang the right song, but they sang it on the wrong side. So if you can go to the next slide, we're going to do what we did yesterday, a mix of me reading and I'm going to have you read. But if you can, take your Bible and turn to Exodus chapter 16. And actually, we're going to start, I'm just going to point out a couple of words here in Exodus chapter 15, verse 24. Because I want you to see this word that just occurs over and over again. You see, one of the charges against the nation Israel is they were given to grumble. Grumbling was their first response. So if you read in Exodus 15, 24, it says, "So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, 'What shall we drink?'" And then we go down to Exodus 16, 1 through 4, and it says, "Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after the departure. The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The sons of Israel said to them, 'Would we have not died in the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full? For you have brought us into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger.' Then the Lord said, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether or not they will walk in my instruction.'" You see this theme that just keeps building through this time as they're trying to learn these lessons in the desert. There's that same word, say. I'm going to find out whether they're going to obey me or not. I'm going to make provision for them for bread, but they're going to have to obey me in it. So it wasn't that he was worried about them being hungry. He was more concerned about whether they would be the people that would follow his instruction, because that was going to be what would set them apart from any other nation in the world. And it's what sets us apart. I often say to young people when I have the chance to speak to them that the Christian life isn't just a change of activity, but it's a change in authority. And that's a hard thing for young people to receive these days, because they think that they're the ultimate authority. But I want them to know very clearly that if you're going to call yourself a Christian and a believer, what you're signing up for. And that's effectively, I think, what God is trying to find out in the nation Israel. Are they going to be the kind of people who are just going to have a change of activity? Or are they going to be the kind of people who will have a change of authority? And the hard thing about that is every one of us sitting here sits at that fulcrum point. Are we going to be people who just change activity? Or are we going to be people who have changed the authority in our life? Now, if you jump down with me to 16 through 20, it says, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it every man as much as he should eat. You shall take an omer piece according to the number of persons each of you has in his tent. Sons of Israel did so, and some gathered much and some little. When they measured it with the omer, who had gathered much had no excess, and he who had gathered little had no lack. Every man gathers as much as he should eat." Now, there's a really important principle there. God meets the need of each individual where they're at, right? And then he said, the sons of Israel, and then when he said, when they measured it with the omer, I'm sorry, in verse 19, "Then Moses said to them, 'Let no man leave any of it till morning.' But they did not listen to Moses." The whole point was, I'm going to give you bread. I'm going to see if you follow my instruction. And they failed. Simple test. Simple essay, and they failed. "They did not listen to Moses, and some left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and became foul, and Moses was angry with them." Simple test, very clear failure. Just gather what you need. And here's the thing. They had what they needed. They didn't need to gather more. It was very clear in the verses preceding that God was providing what they needed based on the size of their family. But they didn't want to follow his instruction. And then we get to chapter 17, verses 1 through 7. It says, "Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages to the wilderness of Sin, according to the command of the Lord, and camped at, I can't pronounce it, and there was no water for people to drink. So here's an interesting thing. This is the same test. They've been to this test before. There was no water. God provided water. So he's taking them back to the same place. I see God doing that in our lives sometimes. We'll go to a place where we don't trust God, where we don't follow his instructions. And sometimes he'll bring us back to the very same place, the very same test, to see if we've learned anything. In verse 2 it says, therefore the people quarreled with Moses. Give us water that we may drink. And Moses said, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water, and they, what's the verb there? Anybody? They grumbled. They grumbled, right? Against Moses and said, why now have you brought us to Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do to this people? A little more and they will stone me. Then the Lord said to Moses, pass before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand and staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. And behold, I will stand before you, and there on the rock at Horeb, you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, and the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He named the place Massah and Meribah because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, because they tested the Lord. Is the Lord among us or not? This is a forgetful, grumbling people. If you ever have a chance and you have a Bible on an iPad or whatever, just do a search for the word grumble. These people are the poster children for given to grumble. It's their first response and their default response. God had already showed that he could bring water to them. And yet, they now are even more amplified in their anger and more amplified in their grumbling. But now, if you turn back with me to Psalm 95, and I am going to have someone read this, Psalm 95. So the psalmist here is referencing back to this moment we just read in Exodus 17. The first part is about praising the Lord, but I want you to, I'd like someone to read from verse 8 or verse 7 through verse 11. Anyone want to be willing to stand and read that for us? Verse 7 through verse 11. Anyone? Go ahead, Teresa. Thank you. Wow, what an indictment against that whole nation who refused to learn the lessons in the desert. My Bible says that God loathed them and they did not enter his rest. That's what I tried to establish yesterday. When we are not willing to learn the lessons in the desert, if that's what God has us trying to do, we don't enter into his rest. We continue to strive. If you can go to the next slide, please. I want to turn back to Genesis chapter 22. Because I want to show you that the father of the nation Israel did not have this view. Their heritage was not one of grumbling. Their heritage was not one of seeing God as holding back from them and them being better off going backwards instead of forwards. Genesis chapter 22. So this is the story of the offering of Isaac by Abraham. And I'm just going to fill in the gaps and we're just going to touch on these two verses. As you know, God told Abraham, you will become the father of many nations, and I will give you a son. Sarah was past the age of having children, but Isaac was born to her. And then God said, I need you to take your son and sacrifice him to me. And so Abraham, being a man who followed God's instructions, takes Isaac, takes wood, takes fire, takes a servant, and goes up to the mountain. And then we get to this amazing interaction between Abraham and Isaac in verse 7 and 8. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am. And he said, my son. And he said, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Now, I'm a father and now a grandfather. I can't even imagine how I would never answer that question the way Abraham did. I would come up with some other distraction. Hey, look at the tree, look at the bird. But Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. You see, Abraham used the word that is often sometimes spoken, Jehovah Jireh, which means God my provider. That's what that word is translated to. God will provide, Jehovah Jireh. Abraham couldn't see, didn't know, but somehow he believed that God had his best interest in mind. And what I really like about this passage is if you look in Genesis 15, it says Abraham believed God and it was accounted or credited to him for righteousness. And that verse is quoted multiple times in the New Testament. And oftentimes it's easy to think that, well, it was theoretical, it was a future thing. But this is where Abraham's faith becomes as practical and as important and as costly as it could ever be. You see, Abraham's faith that God credited him for righteousness was here too, because he believed not only would God be faithful to fulfill his promises, but he would be faithful to provide what was needed to fulfill that promise. And so that's the heritage the Israelites had, which they completely abandoned and went from a people who could say Jehovah Jireh to a people who grumbled at every turn and always wanted to turn back and always wanted to go back, thinking what was behind them was better than what was in front of them because they did not believe that God had their best interest in mind. And then we're going to turn to Matthew chapter 6, verse 25 through 34, if we can turn there. And I am going to have someone read that when you get to there. This talks about God's promise, and I think actually Mark read this a couple days ago. It speaks to Jesus speaking about God's provision in this day and age. So Matthew chapter 26, verses 25 through 34. Anyone feel, all right, go ahead, ma'am, if you could stand and read. This is actually a very encouraging and very scary set of verses, because if you're in the middle of a job loss or a poor investment that maybe went bad, this can be very scary. But this is where the desert separates those who really are going to follow God's instructions, follow God's instruction, and believe that he is the provider. Now, I have lots of examples from our personal life, Becky and I, and the things that we've seen God provide. But what I wanted to do this morning is just share a few of stories from sort of my perspective, being on the inside of Fort. Todd's favorite side is it's a little bit inside baseball, but I've sat on the board. And I wanted you to know some of these things in terms of how God has provided for Fort. Some of these stories may be familiar to you. Some of them may, you may know pieces of them, but I think it's important to know. So one of the key things is when we began to pray about what God would have us do as the next thing to expand Fort, the first thing that we did is we committed to prayer. The board and the staff spent 30 days praying together so that we would have clarity and unity about what God was calling us to do. And I have the privilege of teaching on development communications to Christian organizations. I have a phrase that we borrowed, God's plans always have God's provision. And what we said as a board is the number doesn't matter. What matters more than anything is, are we assured that this is what God is calling us to do? And one of the first things was this amphitheater where we sat. Now, this came about because of the pandemic. People loved being down at the beach. But as a speaker and stuff, it was just tough to do that. And so we began to walk, the Fort staff began to walk the property. And there's a gentleman across the road who teaches at Moody, teaches music, and heard about what we were thinking about. He has a buddy of his, I think it's John Hopkins University. He's one of the foremost acousticians in the United States. An acoustician is someone who goes into concert halls and figures out how to do the perfect sound. And this guy, the professor from Moody, said, let me call my friend. So this guy flies out here on his own nickel and says, oh my goodness, God has given you guys a space like I've never imagined. Now, you might not notice this, but there are less benches on this side than there are on this side. Because when he looked at this space, he said, you don't need to shape a lot of this landscape. The acoustics here already naturally are something that are unbelievable. And then he came and he did the drawings. And Craig will tell you that he knows the details. But all those deflectors and these deflectors, they're set at a specific angle, right? Craig, one's like 154, one's 58. This guy who's one of the leading people that, I don't know this for sure, he's probably done like Carnegie Hall and places like that. He comes here to Fort Wilderness and says, I'm going to help you guys create the best amphitheater you possibly can. So like when God was building the tabernacle, he didn't send in the B team. He sent one of the best guys who didn't know Fort, but someone who knew Fort. So that's where it started. Then the next thing came was the granite. And this granite that we're standing on. So this was probably the most costly part of this. And so two staff members and a board member went over, I think, to the quarry in Green Bay, right? And they were meeting with the guy, and they needed four truckloads of stone. And this is not cheap, right? And so they're having this meeting, and this guy says, now, my father-in-law asked me to ask you something. Is Tom Robertson still associated with the camp? And the guy said, yeah. And, you know, Billy and Steve and Paul said, yeah. They said, well, my father said that he went to boys camp 70 years ago or 60 years ago, and Tom was his counselor. And that was one of the most important years of his, or summers of his life. And this guy, on the spot, God had prepared his heart. He said, you know what? I'm going to donate a load. And so he probably gave away all his profit and donated a load of stone so that we could have this. And then, I guess down in Milwaukee a few years ago, there was ash borers, right? And so Milwaukee was going through and just taking down trees. And another guy associated with the fort went to the city of Milwaukee and said, hey, what are you going to do with those trees? He said, well, we're just going to mulch them or whatever. He goes, can I have them? And they said, yeah, what are you going to do with them? He goes, I'm going to mill them. I've got a project for them. So this guy got all those trees from the city of Milwaukee at no cost, took them, got them milled, and you're sitting on them right now. Amazing provision for how God. And so this thing, which would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars more, or maybe even $1 million more, God's provision was here through the granite, through the wood, through the acoustician, and then all the volunteer labor to create something that I'm going to say most camps could never even imagine. And that's not just where it stops. You've heard a lot about the Happy Day Creative Arts Center that's being built in the center of camp. Maybe what you don't know is last July as a board, we made a decision to not use a general contractor, but to use the fort staff to do that. That was not an easy decision because it puts a burden on the fort staff, and then you got to think about how are we going to do this, how are we going to pay for it. And that next week at family camp, a guy came forward who has a construction company and said, hey, I heard you guys are doing this. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send my concrete guys up here to do the concrete for you. Okay? Sent them up there. These guys came up, laid the concrete. And then, this is the coolest, he sent an invoice to Fort because he wanted to have the business expense, good accounting, good steward, and attached that invoice with the check to cover the amount. And then another guy, who is another builder, and Steve would know the details, but there's a certain kind of finish that you got to put on this, and that's different. And this other guy heard about it, and he said, hey, I heard you need this kind of finish on that. He goes, tell you what, I'm going to send my guys up there. They don't know each other. One's in Milwaukee, one's in a different city. He said, I'm going to send my guys up there, and they're going to finish that concrete for you. Guys come up, they finish the concrete. A few weeks later, invoice comes. Attached to it is a check. Now, I don't have the numbers exactly right, but Craig knows them. But I'm going to say it's like it was $115,000 on the sheet to do that, and Fort did it for $15,000. My point is God's provision is always there when you're walking according to his purposes, even if you can't see it. Sue's on the board with me. She can tell you that meeting we had and just wrestling with, is this the right thing for us to do? It wasn't like an easy decision. We spent a lot of time debating. And immediately after that, God said, I got you covered. It's not the same as bringing water from a rock, but it's bringing concrete from other places that you would never imagine, and wood from Milwaukee, and stone from a guy whose father-in-law had Tom Robertson as a boys counselor 70 years. So for me, as a board member, when I know those stories and I see God's provision, it increases my faith and makes me believe this even more. Not just for my own life, but for Fort. And I honestly could fill the rest of our day telling stories like that. But one of the things that I don't want us to forget is in the last week, Craig Holmquist had a young boy come up to him and hand him two $20 bills. And he wanted Craig to know that he wants to make sure that Fort accomplishes what they accomplish. At the same time, Tom Shaw was meeting with someone, an older couple, who's thinking about selling a lake house and maybe donating it. And what we talked about is that God's provision comes in many, many different ways. And in God's economy, it's not the amount, it's not the check, it's not where it comes, it's whether you are responding with a generous heart to God, because God uses us to make his provision in sometimes. And so when you sit here, you need to know this happened in miraculous ways, in my opinion, in all these different things. So if we can go to the next slide, please. So we talked about this yesterday, but Eve's issue is the root of the problem. In Genesis 3, we read about that. But Eve's biggest challenge was she focused on what she didn't have instead of what she had. And that is a root issue. I had the privilege of speaking to the summer staff on Saturday. And I think it's even tougher growing up these days in the world of Instagram and this kind of stuff, because you're always wanting to live a life of comparison. It was difficult following God in obedience, but the nation Israel missed the most important point. It wasn't that there wasn't struggles. It wasn't that there weren't challenges. But they missed the most important point. God was trying to show himself to be faithful, to keep his promises, and to be his provider. He was going to be their Jehovah Jireh if they would only let him. There's a theologian that I listen to every once in a while. He's quite heady, but he has sometimes these simple quotes, and I love this. He said, "Modern life often overlooks the givenness of what we have. It's so easy to forget that what we have, including the breath in our lungs, the clothes on our back, it's given to us. And when we acknowledge that there's a givenness to life, then we acknowledge that there's a giver." Now, in the last couple minutes we have, I just want to show that God's faithfulness for providing, if you can go to the next slide, please, is evidenced because when we had our greatest need, God said, "I'm going to take care of that." So if you can turn to Romans chapter 5. Verses 6 through 11, and I'm going to read this. It says, "For while we were still helpless," in other words, we didn't have anything we could do. We didn't have any provision. "At the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would dare even die. But God demonstrates his own love towards us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more than having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through him. For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his son, much more having been reconciled, we shall be saved by his life. And not only this, but we also exalt in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received reconciliation." You see, while we need money, while we need clothes, while we need houses, while we need jobs, while we need health, all those things, I don't want to diminish those. Our greatest need is that we were separated from God. Sin took us out of the garden, made us hide, and put us away from a relationship with God. And the only hope that we had was not our provision. It was the provision that Abraham spoke to Isaac about. "Where is the lamb, Dad?" And Abraham said, "God will provide." He answered Isaac's question in Genesis, but he answered our greatest need here in the New Testament when Christ went to the cross. So I just need to say to you, if you're sitting here and you've never really wrestled with that idea to be reconciled with God, to put that relationship right with God, Fort's one of the best places to do that, because God knew that your greatest need was something that he was going to make his greatest provision for by allowing Christ to go to the cross. Now, if you go to the next slide, please. And we're almost done here. So this passage in 1 Corinthians 10, 6 through 11 is really interesting. It says now, and I've highlighted something. Now, these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our heart on evil things. So the nation of Israel was given to us as an example. They're the ones we need to learn the lessons from the desert. But what I want you to see is some of the things I've highlighted. Verse 7, do not be idolaters as some of them were. And then verse 8, we should not commit sexual immorality as some of them did. Verse 9, we should not test Christ as some of them did. And then verse 10, and do not grumble as some of them did. Now, I have to tell you, when I read this list of sins, I was taken that the first three are kind of what I would call the headline sins. There aren't too many people that would argue against idolatry as a sin, right? That's probably been sermons preached on that, or sexual immorality, or testing Christ. But what I think is interesting is grumbling is on that list too. God is equating grumbling here, because these are not ranked. There's no higher or lesser, or mortal or venial. There's nothing here. There's four things identified that the nation Israel failed at. Setting their hearts on evil things. They were idolaters. They committed sexual immorality. They tested Christ. And they grumbled. Grumble has a weight that I don't think we often think about. Grumbling is something for you to consider if that's the nature of your heart. If you're the person given to grumble rather than be grateful, given to want to turn back rather than trust going forward, you need to be reminded of this list. I have to tell you, when I first became aware of this, I was like, oh my goodness, I would never put those things on the same list. But it's very clear that God has done that for the nation Israel, for us to be as examples, because that's what it says in verse 11. These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings to us. So as you sit here today, part of what I'm saying to you is we need to pay attention to this, because we're being warned by the nation Israel and the lessons they did not learn in the desert. Okay, if you can go to the last slide, please. So just some questions for you to consider. Do you believe and trust he is Jehovah Jireh? Something you got to settle. And when you do settle that, he will put you to the test. I just want to forewarn you. You will come to a place, and whether you're going to believe, he will provide for you in ways. Do you focus on what you have or what you don't have? And what you need to understand, and we'll look at this later this week, there are implications when they went out to spy out the promised land and the failure to enter in fully on what God has had. We may be led into difficult situations materially, financially, emotionally, physically. That is not the result of sinful choices. But we will sing the right song on the right side because we believe he is Jehovah Jireh and has our best interest in mind. And that's the lesson of the desert that the nation Israel did not learn and was given to us as a warning. So be someone given to be grateful, not to grumble. Let's pray. Father, I thank you that sitting here today, we have so much to be grateful for. Just even sitting here and retelling the story of your provision for this amphitheater in so many ways here at Fort. I pray, Lord, if there's anyone unsettled in their heart about their relationship with you, that they would take a moment to talk to the Fort staff or to me or someone so that they could get that matter settled and realize that your greatest provision met our greatest need. And I pray, Lord, if there's anyone unsettled about whether you're the Jehovah Jireh or that you have our best interest in mind, that they would settle that today. And then as you take them through that time in the desert, that you would show yourself to be faithful and let them learn that you are one who completely loves us and completely wants to provide for us. Thank you for the beauty of this day again. Pray that everyone be safe, and we just look forward to enjoying the rest of the day. In your son's name, amen.